Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me as always is Steve. How are you doing?
John, it's been a while. How are you?
Good, good. How are your crypto investments going? Your Dogecoin is going to fund your retirement yet?
I've realized that I'm not made for the long-term game. I am way too skittish. No more crypto for me, please. I want to exit all my positions and just relax and buy an ETF.
Yeah, I think I kind of halfway think people get rewarded for being completely fearless.
You know,
you go in and we're fearful
I'm
investors.
So fearful, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. But then there's good old-fashioned, regular, day-to-day banking and getting stuff done, not just doing a joke coin. Fortunately, we have with us the founder and CEO of MovoCash, Eric Solis, who specializes exactly in that, all those things you need to get done with your bank accounts and debit cards. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. You have an interesting background, but start us off with a little bit about what is MovoCash? Great name, by the way. Very catchy.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting. People say, how did you come up with it? I said, it was one of those things where we had as a small team, we went through every single possible iteration of a name, and we came up with stuff that was completely insane, off the wall. I had post-it notes over that covered an entire wall. I'd spent thousands of dollars on URLs. Finally, the very last name I came up with, it was like thousands. I said, Movo. And everyone's like, and we're going with Movo. That's it. Period. The end. So it was just, one of those things. And it turns out that it means in Latin to move. So it makes perfect sense. I didn't know that at the time, but there you have it.
There you go. Things work out that way. Yeah. My account's often no mo cash, but I think yours is better.
Thank you. Let's hope so.
This is not an easy road to start your own fintech and get funding and build everything. What was the first step?
So if you don't mind, I'll take you back a little bit, since it's part of the exact reason about how I came about it was, early on, I pioneered the concept of micro-investing. And it was this idea that, if you could save $5 a day or a dollar a day, from hardened, financial people, they said, save a little every day. The problem is that the systems didn't exist to actually do it. So I went about building a micro investing technology. But what I realized in the process was that most people spend every dollar that they make. So I thought to myself, if I'm going to help people accumulate wealth and to become better with money, I need to get on the spending side of the equation. And then we can talk about how they can be better savers, right? So, but then I found that the financial system wasn't very inclusive, no more and perhaps less than even the securities industry. So I looked at the industry differently, and I thought about money more as a trading vehicle of sorts. It was sort of like, why did money have to be in silos in such a way as to cause it to move slow? Why did we need 3, 4, 5 day holds? And this was early on when Bitcoin was like $200, or less per coin. But I saw Bitcoin as sort of catapulting us years into the future technologically, but in some ways back into the dark ages where fungibility of money was concerned. And I thought, what if you could converge the two, create something similar to a crypto coin that provided some anonymity, gave you full control, allowed you to kind of like create your own denominations, but you did it on what we'll call the fiat rails, or at least have the accessibility to the 45 million POS systems worldwide with a brand that everybody understands and loves, MasterCard and Visa. And so I set out to build that system, and lo and behold, here we are today, 2.5 million cards issued later, and accelerating to new heights as we speak.
So I got to ask you, how is it competing against Chime, the 800-pound gorilla of new fintech mobile banking?
So, you know, Chris Britt and Mark Trouton are I consider them to be, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, they're not drinking buddies or anything, but I like them. They're good guys. You know, I think that, you know, there, I'll use innovation as the starting point there, right? So there's incremental innovation, there's disruptive innovation, and then there's radical innovation. And we're a radical innovation. Bitcoin's a radical innovation. PayPal is a radical innovation. Chime is a disruptive innovation. They are essentially attacking the, you know, like, for example, you can overdraft your account $20. Okay, fair enough. And they won't charge you for it. So that takes a big bite out of revenue to the large traditional incumbent banks, but it's not that innovative. It's very incremental at best, right? In some ways, there's nothing there. So what we've done is to avoid spending too much time putting pig on the lipstick and rather making a radical innovation, an engine that does something completely unique and different, and that being the outcome of digital cash on the fiat rails and Movo Cash.
That's interesting. And you also began the company by providing essentially a prepaid debit card, right? So that you could load it and kind of use services that require a debit card that maybe people didn't have access to. Is that the initial use case? And if so, how has that evolved over the course of the journey of the company?
It's accurate, okay, but it isn't exactly true. And I'll tell you why. What we did was we took a system that was designed to do a thing and then broke it into a million pieces and put it back together completely different. All the way from the front end in the way that the consumer interacts with the form factor, that being the prepaid as you define it, and at the processing level, that being the back end where the machine works. We essentially re-architected, re-engineered using a prepaid bin because it was a form factor that was universally identified around the globe, again, 45 million merchants, without us having to go out and acquire merchants one at a time. That takes a very long time. It is a very difficult task. And what we did was to essentially, and I don't mind saying it this way, we hijacked the credit card rails, used their merchant acquiring systems that were already in place, and created a digital functioning mechanism in a 16-digit card number that everyone already knows how to use. Even my 12-year-old daughter knows how to use it, mm-hmm. but re-engineered in such a way where it behaves more like a dollar that you would put on a cash wrap in a physical environment, but instead it's happening digitally, online, in-app, and even in-store, in a fully contactless environment, end to end.
Wow, quite interesting. On the contactless side, I saw some data maybe about six months ago, so sort of highlighted how there's been, of course, a tremendous spike in contactless payments. What kind of things have you seen from your users in terms of how they use the card, during COVID and as COVID comes to an end now?
You know, when we think contactless, I think that what we have in our mind is the way that we've been sort of conditioned thus far in the journey, which is NFC technologies, right? So near frequency is a form of RFID. It's a close proximity technology that allows communication between devices so long as they're, let's say, you know, within a foot away or something. But that's only, you know, a fraction of the contact problem. And in particular in a world where, you know, touching things is becoming a bigger concern for reasons we all understand, you know, we think of it more from the standpoint of when we use the idea of end-to-end, we're saying, you know, you're opening the account, you're getting your digital card, you're loading your card, you're getting your statements, you're sending money peer-to-peer, you're spending the money. Yes, you're using NFC if you desire, But in no case are we essentially relying on just one link in that chain to be contactless. We've built a system that is 100% end-to-end contactless. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, how are we better than the other guys? You know, we don't rely on a green envelope to be our differentiating factor, right? In other words, you don't have to wait for a green envelope in the mail for 12, 15, 20 days. It's going to, your card is issued in real time. The minute that you claim your money or the minute you register, you're ready to spend. You provision that card to Apple Pay, Google Pay, Samsung Pay, and you're ready to go.
You also, this is interesting. It seems like there's been this movement now of sort of creating all these different use cases for fintechs in terms of having a prepaid debit card, doing the contactless payments, which you mentioned as well, having a virtual card. What do you see the future of the industry now? Is it one app that can do it all, or is it multiple services that can give you one use case, but they can actually do it very, very well?
I think that app fatigue is, you know, early on, I think that it was sort of like pick one thing, do it really well. Apps were new. They were exciting. People enjoy finding a new app, you know, and we're not talking that long ago, you know, 3-5 years ago, right? It's really transitioned where we're all now, okay, you know, an app's an app, right? You know, I think people want to be able to accomplish more in one place rather than less. And since so many, again, putting lipstick on the pig, so many of the solutions now are commodities, right? They just are. I mean, Bill Pay, there's, you know, every traditional bank's offering a Bill Pay feature. So to offer Bill Pay in your app isn't special, right? So, you know, there's nothing special about a plastic card. So the point is that a lot of the incremental innovations or just simply doing something digital now is not enough. That's why, you know, if I were to give a shout out to every entrepreneur on planet Earth, I'd say, be radical, create something freaking cool, you know, that people are willing to, that they want to pay for. Because free, you know, the old saying that if it's free, if you're getting a product for free, then you're the product, right? So,
right.
So, you know, the idea that, you know, you're that's the innovation is you're giving something away for free. I don't know. I mean, okay, whatever. I'm not impressed. Build something people want to pay for. That Steve Jobs is a perfect example of that. He doesn't give his phone away, nor should he.
Right, right. So the idea is maybe having the ability to pay for stuff and have a really great experience that's it's differentiated from what other people can offer, right?
Exactly. And you know, I had somebody ask me, you know, what do you think about UX and UI? How much time you spend? I said, you know, we've been in a beta and I've spent almost no time worrying about how pretty it is, right? What I want to do is build an engine. I want to build a technology that makes people's lives better, right? I don't care. I'm a bit of a, you know, an aberration there. But I just don't care. I mean, beautiful. There's a time to make it beautiful, and that time will come. And I think our app's pretty. I think it's beautiful, but don't misunderstand me. But the point I'm getting at is that is not where I start. Like, I think too many people start there. And if it does all, has all the latest, you know, bells and whistles from a UX or UI perspective, people forget to look what's under the hood. It's like a pretty, I have a great friend that races motorcycles. These things do like 200 miles an hour. And you can look at one motorcycle against another and you can't tell by looking. The one actually that's the cheesy, cheap one looks better than the one that'll do 200 miles an hour, you know, because it's the engine that matters.
Yeah, what color is the confetti in your app? By the way,
actually, since we're going there, I think we have a piñata or something.
yeah, that's differentiated. Yeah, I'd pay for that.
It is. Yeah. It's also to your point, Eric. I actually have a really good example of this. I texted John maybe yesterday or so. I've used both Robinhood and the Fidelity account now to do some trading, And although Robinhood is of course a much, you know, prettier experience, right? You have the confetti, the beautiful UI, the simplicity, the functionality and the tools are not there when you compare it to the Fidelity account. It's just not as powerful. So I think that people sometimes kind of price that UX and UI over the functionality of the tool and how useful it is, which I think speaks to your focus, to make it just a functional, useful tool and not necessarily one that will be, you know, super beautiful.
I mean, you know, I think that's a really good example. And I think that more and more people are going to be looking at what's under the hood. I really believe that, you know, sort of it started at, you know, where do we think things are going? You know, I think that the commodity is going to be offered because, you know, it has to be. It's part of the overall need that meets the customer experience. But longer run, I think that people are going to start weeding out just, you know, where we've put lipstick on a pig and called it, you know, some digital massive innovation, or, you know, and there's really nothing there. There's nothing that a traditional bank can't come in and duplicate very easily.
So right. Most people don't even want to think about their payments app. They just want to get their stuff done. And like you said, most of that is what anybody can do. So what? How can you differentiate yourself, make something that people would pay for?
We provide an on-demand mobile banking experience with end-to-end contactless payments. That's kind of like our tagline, right? But what that means is that you, and I'll go back to talking a little bit about, again, the traditional, let's call it the cash economy, the local economy. You know, you walk in, you want to buy a Led Zeppelin record, you drop, you know, $12.37 on the table. The guy takes your money and gives you your record. There's not this whole idea of like, hey, give me your card number, I'll write it down. And anytime you want a record, you know, you come in, it's like this whole idea that we've been conditioned to give this 16-digit card number that gives a full access to our bank account balance or our credit limits in a world where the dark web is full of all of our information is complete insanity. So what we've done is to create, and I don't want to call it a virtual card. I push back from that. This is a true blue digital cash experience using a 16-digit card number. So I'll give you an example. You know, I signed up for Sling the other day. Okay. So I got a Sling account. I created a digital cash card for Sling. I put exactly the amount of money that they needed to activate my account into my Sling card, okay? But it's now at zero. So I get to control when they take my money and how much they get to take. It's not just, hey, here's my bank account, go ahead and hit it anytime you want. How many of us, how many times have had money taken out of our card, out of our bank account because we were conditioned? And I know venture capitalists hate this, and they so be it. You know, that's what I'll stick my finger in their face and say, yep, I'm coming after your freaking business model of ripping people off, yeah. Right? People are going to control their money. They're going to decide whether or not they want you to have it or not, period, the end. And that's new. And that's what we built.
I love the passion, Eric. That's you sound like a startup founder.
Thank you. I am. I really am. I mean, you know, to be able to do what I do, get up every morning and overcome the obstacles that are constantly in my way, I've got to believe in what I'm doing and have more than money in mind to do it. I mean, when I say more than money, I'm talking about the exit. The exit is what it is, right? But I fight for the little guy. You know, I'm not a Johnny come lately. You know, I was doing this in 1999 and everyone thought I was crazy. You know, they're like, who cares about the unbanked? I'm like, I do. You know, that's been I walked away from making $1 million a year as a 30, you know, 1 year old kid to build the first micro investing technology. And I did it because I'm passionate about it.
How concerned are you, Eric, of the fact that it seems like banks are really quick to follow in some of the footsteps of some of fintech, right? So we see banks now offering, some banks have eliminated all fees. They're offering all these, you know, pretty good mobile experiences, but they also have the scale to really deploy things to a larger audience. So How concerned are you that maybe banks will replicate what you're doing now with mobile cash? And what are you doing to stay atop, you know, on top of your game with your passion?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've had more innovations stolen than you can shake a stick at. And that's, you know, I love the way Elon Musk says, hey, here's my patents, go build something cool. I mean, really, I suppose that that's in many people's minds a stupid way to be in business. But I don't walk to the same drum beat as a lot of other people. I don't want to walk to their drum beat. I don't give a flying hoot how they see the world. This is how I see the world. And no, I would prefer that you have some ethics and partner with me instead of rip me off. But you know what? If I can't execute and you can, go do the damn thing, right? I mean, that's at the end of the day. I don't care who does it. Somebody needs to get out and make this world freaking work better than it does, where financial inclusion is the case. So, you know, I can tell you this, that it's really hard to steal an innovation without understanding the bedrock of what made that innovation happen, and you'll lose steam and someone else is going to come along and eat your lunch. So the one thing that they can't steal is my passion, my vision, my innovation, my creativity. So, and I've seen it happen over and over again. So that's how I see the world. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's my time is limited here on planet Earth. I tell everybody, just go make the world a better place. If we spend more time thinking about how we make the world a better place, so be it. You know, you end up in a box anyway. You know, it's kind of like the Monopoly game. Everything goes back in the box at the end of the your hour and a half game, and life's similar to that.
Who wants to follow up going into the box? But I'll switch it over to, you mentioned on the website working all together with other apps and kind of integrating. It sounds a bit like the super app kind of experience. Is that where you would like to see this going over the next few years?
I mean, I think that if I were to, you know, pull out my crystal ball, I would say that that convergence between some of what we're seeing in cryptographic money, cryptocurrencies, interoperability is sort of like the buzzword out there. But really all that means is that it's a it is truly an ecosystem, and it is going to be a lot less, I think, where it's like a, you know, winner take all mentality. Hopefully, you know, across the country and around the world, we begin to see that there is a need for a lot of different systems connecting, you know, taking the best of what cryptographic money has to offer, blockchain, even identification, new ways to think about IDing people. Some of the legacy systems have a place and they're not going to go away. Some of the authorization layers, we talked about CIP, KYC, some of the regulation layers aren't going away. As a matter of fact, we need to integrate them more into some of the areas of money that, have pushed back, you know, that being, say, for example, Bitcoin and others. And I think there is now a move towards embracing regulation, smart contracts, Ethereum, all of that serves, I think, the future in a really great way, where we will, you know, cross the chasm where, we'll experience money in the way that it was intended.
You mentioned also about financial inclusion and the underserved. What do you think the financial industry could do to improve that situation? And what would you like to see governments do?
One of the main drivers of my passions is to see the underserved brought into sort of the core of what is happening with the banking industry today. It is more than just, again, a digital application. And it's not, by the way, interestingly enough, about just fees. How do we know that? We know that because consumers in the underbanked arena pay some of the highest fees in the world today. So just simply taking a fee to zero doesn't meet the need. It's all about allowing them to, for example, remain at work, being able to have the freedom where they don't have to walk into a Walmart, stand in a line for an hour when their lunch break was only 45 minutes. It's about convenience. It's about meeting them where they are. It's about understanding their plight and then building valuable resources around that. Like, for example, when Movo sends a peer-to-peer transaction, I send somebody $100 using Movo, they can claim it instantaneously and it is instantly loaded to a debit card. So no need to have to go down to Western Union or MoneyGram or otherwise to convert it into cash, because it spends like cash 45 million merchants globally. And if they need cash, if they actually need greenbacks, they can walk into a store, make a purchase, and just like any other debit card, get cash back. So, or by another example is to take it to a cardless ATM system. So these ways in which money moves very fast, eliminate holds, right? These are the types of benefits that will help underbanked consumers accomplish objectives that are important to them. And that's, I think, what needs to be the focus. And I think that the idea of making it all about a fee that's not being charged anymore is a mistake, because it's not sustainable. And eventually you'll see that fee creep back up.
Yeah. No, that's interesting you say that. You know, overdraft fees have been such in the news lately. And I know monthly fees is cited as one of the complaints against large banks. Yeah, it sounds like you're talking about something that's much more comprehensive. There's a lack of flexibility.
It's expensive being poor, right?
Exactly. It's the poor tax. It really is. And don't misunderstand me. Fees are important. It just bothers me, to be candid, when people are being led astray by focusing on just the fees, right? Because you can fund, any venture capitalist can fund a no fee solution for the next 2 years, right? Here's $100 million, don't charge a fee, get everybody. And then what's gonna happen is you're gonna have fee creep. And guarantee, mark my words, put it on your calendar, call me in 2 years, you go, you know what, Eric, you were exactly right. Cause you know what, they can't fund it forever. And so it just drives me nuts, because all it does is it stop. You know, you ask the question, how are we gonna knock the 800 pound gorilla off? Well, all that is money, it'll run out, you know? And then what, right? You don't have a business model. You can't survive on venture capital forever. Right. And I don't have any issue with VC. Don't misunderstand my point. It's just that I don't like the way that it blocks innovation is really, at the end of the day, the bottom line. It's we need sustainable business models that work long run, meet needs of the underbanked, right? And the banked and the rich people too, by the way. We can't forget about them. It's like we're all, at the end of the day, the difference between the guy sitting living under a bridge and the guy flying around in a jet, not that big of a difference. You know, it's like we're all pretty close. It's just one guy had some, you know. So I try to think of it that way, because I think to neutralize our thinking along the lines of how we see people and then to innovate, to get to those that have, you know, I say the least common denominator, not in a negative sense, but that's the reality, right? So how do we get to them? And we have to be candid and truthful about our approach to meeting their needs.
It's amazing how the notion of having a sustainable business that has, you know, that's built for the long term, it seems sort of revolutionary nowadays, right? With all this VC money kind of flooding the space and subsidizing what could potentially be kind of crappy businesses.
You're knocking my Dogecoin investment again?
always.
Yeah, I mean, like we're launching Movo Chain. I think it's going to launch Monday, right? And I mean, I think it's a radical innovation. You know, what we've done is to build a cross-functional peer-to-peer system, so that, again, this idea that I was talking about earlier about kind of like a machination of worlds, right? So you have somebody that is in crypto and they want to be able to send somebody $100. They may not want crypto and they may not want Movo, but they know what a debit card is, right? And they like debit cards. So what we built is a system where that money can be converted back into fiat currency and sent to an individual, regardless of whether they know who Movo is or whether they want Bitcoin, they can claim it, and the entire transaction is done within 1 hour. Now that's starting to, at least, you know, I don't think we've got it all figured out yet, but at least it's starting to move into the direction of taking these two worlds, pushing them together to create a unique outcome that is meeting a need, right? Again, I said that crypto's taken us into, you know, sort of the dark ages where fungibility is concerned. Well, Movo chain starts to close the gap a little bit, right, in terms of getting that money moving, freed up so that it can be used to help others or help yourself, or, you know, put money into your account so you can spend it in the way you choose.
I agreed 100%.
So Eric, what other technologies or fintechs do you see out there doing interesting things? Who do you admire? Who would you like to work for example, or work with, I should say?
Wow. That's a really good question. I'm going to answer, it's going to be a bit of an unorthodox answer to the question, because you'd expect me to say some really innovative young company, but who I've been a great boatload of respect for is Fiserv. And I'll tell you why. I know that Fiserv is not, you know, they're like bank technology, but man, are they hungry to learn. They call me and they're not interested in ripping me off. They're like, we know that we're behind the curve in fintech and we want to learn, and, you know, we want to partner, and, you know, they've just been amazing to work with. So I respect them. I respect companies that are making billions of dollars a year with enterprise values worth tens of billions of dollars that are still thinking like innovators. And we need more big companies thinking like that, because to your point earlier, you know, look at Fidelity, into your mind's eye, is actually better than Robinhood. So again, you know, if we can get big companies with lots of resources focused on solving real problems, imagine what the world could look like today.
Yeah, that would be a change, wouldn't it?
It would. A refreshing one, yeah. So my hat to Fiserv, because they're really refocused. We got a new CEO there, and he's in my mind's eye, he's on the right path. He's got his team focused, and they're doing some cool things.
They got the right culture. Yeah, that's a tough thing to manage too, especially if it's been the wrong way for a long time.
Yeah,
culture is probably one of the biggest management challenges.
Well, status quo. And you know, especially if you're making billions of dollars doing something a certain way, and to come to that place where you disrupt yourself, and I use that term, you know, in the context of, you know, kind of like attacking a revenue stream that you've grown to, you know, live off of, that's hard to do. But I think that big companies, some of the, you know, the smart ones are looking at ways to do that every day, and along the path, you know, they're able to stay ahead of the competition.
Yeah. Interesting pick for sure. Well, we wish you all the luck. It sounds like you're really doing a great job there and influencing things for the better. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. And would love to come back another time. I'll keep you posted. Let's Movo.
Yeah. Before Fiserv buys you out, we'll have you back on to talk about it.
Right. Exactly.
That's founder and CEO of MovoCash, Eric Solis. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.